Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zibbymedia.com or follow me on social at Zibby Owens or join the community at Zibby Readers. Katya Apikina is the author of Mother Doll, a novel. Katya is a novelist, screenwriter, and translator. Her novel, The Deeper the Water, the Uglier the Fish, was named a best book of 2018 by Kirkus, BuzzFeed, LitHub, and others. It was a finalist for the LA Times Book Prize and has been translated into Spanish, Catalan, French, German, and Italian. She has published stories in various literary magazines and translated poetry and prose for Night Wraps the Sky, Writings by and about Mayakovsky. Shortlisted for the Best Translated Book Award. She co-wrote the screenplay for the feature film New Orleans, Mon Amour, which premiered at South by Southwest in 2008. She is the recipient of an Elizabeth George Grant, an Olin Fellowship, the Elena Wilson Prize, and a third-year fiction fellowship from Washington University in St. Louis, where she did her MFA. She has done residencies at VCCA, Playa, UCross, Art Omi, Writing and Foundation, Jan Mikulski, and Switzerland. Born in Moscow, she grew up in Boston and currently lives in Los Angeles with her husband, daughter, and dog. Welcome, Katya. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Mother Doll, a novel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, Katya is in LA right now, and it is 5 a.m, and she is still doing this podcast. So for everybody out there, even like in your cars or wherever you are, just like stop and applaud that Katya got up so early for this. Go follow her on Instagram and read her book and do all the things because this is like true dedication.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here.
Okay, so Mother Doll, please tell listeners what your book is about.
So my book is about this woman, Zhenya, who is in her early 20s, living in Los Angeles. She's pregnant. She's in a relationship she sort of sleepwalked into. And then she gets this strange phone call from a medium who's channeling her dead great grandmother who had been a Russian revolutionary and who had abandoned her grandmother in Russia, well, in the Soviet Union by then. And she is in this sort of purgatory place. And she's hoping that by confessing, you know, all these things that had happened, she will be able to sort of become dissolved. She lives in this kind of cloud of ancestral grief. And Zhenya is kind of reluctant to like receive all of the story. But at the same time, in the process of hearing about this story or this sort of like ancestral trauma and really understanding it, she's able to change her life and become like more of a realized adult.
Amazing. Your voice in the book is so great. I was like, it's funny, but like, it's like dark humor, but relatable. And the way you write about sex is like so funny. Like the times where it just inevitably starts happening in your story. And they're like all these things you're like, and then, you know.
Yeah, these characters are messy. So there's a lot of
it's amazing
happening. Thank you.
Her relationship with Ben, who at the beginning, she's in this sort of relationship that you also describe in such a funny way that like their lives sort of evolved in parallel as they moved to LA and tried to make it. And then a few years later, okay, fine, they just like got married.
Yeah, it's not the most romantic, exciting relationship. You know, they're very young too. So yeah. I feel like it's not that it was necessarily a bad relationship, but it was like a very young relationship.
So you start early on with abortion, which can be a hot button issue, but you do talk about it and how it feels at different points in life, even though it's still the same cells, which I found very interesting. How you feel about it at different points can be really different. Can you just like speak to that?
Yeah. So she is pregnant by accident. Her husband had had a vasectomy, so they weren't planning on it. She had had an abortion in high school, and it had not been like this traumatic event, nor had it been like something she'd really like thought about much, which I thought was important to portray because I feel like often abortion is shown as just this like event that's supposed to be so traumatic that people just like think about constantly, you know, and that wasn't her relationship to it at the time or later. But then when she's pregnant this time, she just feels like that's not an option for her, even though it definitely is going to blow up her life, you know, because her husband does not want a child. And she says like, it's messed up to force a person to have a child that doesn't want one. And at the same time, she just doesn't see at this point in her life that it's an option at all. She is already thinking about this cluster of cells as a baby. And that shift in the way she's thinking about it just makes her, you know, willing to blow up her life. And also, I think she's a person who's like constantly on the verge of wanting to blow up her life. Mm-hmm. So I think it works out ultimately.
There's so many things I want to get to, but the relationship she has with her grandmother, who by the point when the book starts is sort of non-responsive, but they're so close that she wants to tell all her news to her anyway, because maybe she can hear. But then you get a lot of flashbacks to her relationship with her grandmother and how that is so meaningful to her. And then, of course, her whole matrilineal lineage is involved in the story as we go back and learn much more. But that special bond between the two of them and how it leaves out her mom in a way, right? Because of what they have. Tell me a little more about that and your own relationship maybe with your grandmother or where. I know you mentioned in the back a lot of this and you did a ton of research and all the history and your own family history and all of that. But I don't know. Tell me about that special relationship.
Yeah, so she immigrated to the U.S. from Russia with her grandmother and her mother, and she did not know her dad at all. And her grandmother was like this nurturing, loving presence, and she sort of like took over that role, that maternal role, and there wasn't really space for her mother to be in their relationship. And, you know, her grandmother was a really warm and wonderful grandmother, but as a mother, she had been, you know, really, she had gone through a lot of trauma and she was not like a loving mother to Marina, to Zhenya's mom. And then she was sort of able to be that person for her granddaughter in a way that she hadn't been able to be that way for her mom. And it's interesting too, because when Zhenya has her kid, her mom is like really wants to step into that role of grandmother too. Yep. In Russia, it was really common for people to have kids really young and for grandparents to be there and like raise their kids. And I grew up, when I came to the US, I came with my mom and her parents, and my dad came later. And so, yeah, I had a very close relationship with my grandmother and my grandfather. And then when after my dad came, his parents came over, and my paternal grandmother and I were pretty close. And after she died, she left me these memoirs that she'd written about like her own traumatic history. Her family had been killed during World War II. She basically like escaped on foot, and she was coming from Poland. She basically like walked and then was on a train through Russia, you know, and she had nobody. It was really like just such a horrific story. So yeah, she left me these memoirs, which was such a gift. And I started translating them so that my daughter would one day be able to read them. And it was so interesting because in the process of translating them, I felt like I was having a conversation with her. Mm. And in some ways, that conversation was actually a lot more honest than I think the kind of conversation I could have had with her when she was alive, partly because I had been much younger and there was like, you know, there's like just some cultural barriers, or I felt like I couldn't argue with her, you know, necessarily in real life, but I found myself on the page just like arguing with her. And then it was also really interesting that like, even though she was not a writer, there were so many like details or the kinds of things she would notice in her memoir that are like exactly the kinds of things that I notice and write about and that I think like are funny. You know, there are details where like things that are just not particular, that are like pretty innocuous, suddenly feel like full of danger in this way for me, or things that just feel so weird and off kilter that are just like disorienting for me. And I like never really put it together until reading her memoirs that like where that was coming from, you know, this like kind of sense of being like hyper vigilant that has made its way into my life. Of course, it comes from this like ancestral trauma that was passed down to me from my relatives who, you know, had been through a lot, like even just living in the Soviet Union in a totalitarian country just is very stressful and creates a lot of issues for people, I guess. Yeah, that then, you know, their grandchildren can then like work out through novels and therapy.
Interesting. Well, now it kind of makes sense that you had Zhenya, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Literally like receiving these transcripts through this medium, Paul, which is such an interesting way that you decided to do that. I mean, this, you could have done this in so many ways, like just from the writing standpoint, to try to communicate a grandmother's story and the impact through history. But you chose to do it through this funny medium who she's like, why am I even on the phone with him? And to the point where, you know, at some point her grandmother is like literally inside her, which was such a moving part of the book, by the way, when she's really going into the worst parts of what happened to her from the inside. And you said she feels like all, what do you say, like ashy, or like, I can't, it felt like so burnt almost what was happening. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Anyway, so you have these like moving scenes where we're like in the trauma, and then you have these like funny scenes of like motherhood with her friend Chloe and like da da da, and like, you know, it's but you also have this like Greek chorus where you're like, what is going on here? And until you realize these are dead people, right, like talking to each other, and you're, anyway, where did this come from? How did you decide on this structure and all of that?
There's a lot of different textures in the book. With the mediumship, like I actually took mediumship classes during the pandemic and before, and that definitely inspired me. And I find the process of writing often feels like you're channeling something, mm-hmm. which seems very similar to mediumship.
Wait, you can become a medium, but you don't, like, can you develop those skills? I thought you were born with that ability or not.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are definitely classes that can kind of teach you how to use those, how to tune into those skills that probably most people have, right? I don't know if like what I was experiencing through the classes was not, I wasn't contacting the dead. It was more just like this kind of a deep meditation or a guided meditation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the kind of spaces that I was kind of in when I was doing that ended up being represented in the book in the afterlife. The way I sort of describe the afterlife is sort of the weird spaces I was in when I was doing these guided mediumship meditations. But I have been visited by, actually weirdly, by both my grandfathers. Those are the people who have visited me in my dreams. And those felt like kind of contacts with the dead. But that wasn't through any sort of like me seeking them out. It just sort of had happened where I just felt their presence in my dreams. And it felt like a visit. It felt different than just a regular dream about them. But to be honest, I don't know how much I even believe in mediumship. And it was like really fun to kind of explore it. But during the writing of this book, my grandfather, who I was very close with, passed away. Oh. And I felt myself, like when I was doing these mediumship classes, it felt more like I was just really trying to contact him, because I missed him. And it felt like that desire was like, I just felt like that kind of desperation that made it seem like, oh, I could totally see how I would just like be gullible and just want it so badly that I would like believe anything that anyone kind of told me. And usually, mediums are telling you like, this person wants the best for you and they forgive you and you can move on, So it's not like there's something like really sinister about that, but it did kind of feel like, oh, I'm just sort of willing to believe anything because I miss someone and want to make contact, And so it didn't feel great to be like in that space. It didn't feel like when I was doing it before, the mediumship stuff felt more like kind of abstract and exciting. But when it became really concrete in this way, it just felt too sad maybe. But yeah, so that's where the mediumship stuff came in. And I thought it was like really fun to have this external person involved in the retelling of this family history, because it's like an outside perspective and it's fun to get that, And then also it's funny because he doesn't speak Russian at first and the ghost is just like, so he's just like kind of speaking in tongues basically that then Zhenya has to translate to like understand the story. So it just makes this story sort of like a nesting doll, like the title of just these kind of stories within stories within stories. And then these sort of obfuscations or confusions that then like, get sort of transmuted from each generation. There's like, you need to translate it. It's being channeled through another person. There's just all these sort of layers to the story being received, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. So what is your takeaway on the effects of family history, family trauma, knowing what came before you? Like, what do we do with that knowledge? Like, how does that affect, like, now you understand more about why you see things a certain way. Now what? Like, because we all have our family histories, right, circling around us, what we know, what we can imagine, the pain, the things, all the stuff that is left unsaid that we will never know. Like, what do we do with all of that?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight.
As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
That's such a good question. I mean, in the book, there's like a very kind of cathartic release that is like, I don't want to give any spoilers, but like, I think there's something that really happens where Zhenya is able to sort of transmute all of that and heal it, you know? And I think that like, just knowing where a lot of these sort of traumas come from and just being aware of them and accepting them like allows us to heal them and to move forward and to not be like acting unconsciously and not sort of realizing how we're reacting to things. You know, it was so interesting with my grandmother's memoirs. She had actually given them to me before she died, but I only started reading them after she died because, and I just kept thinking like, why? You know, I'm so curious. I was so curious about her story, but there was something in me that was like, oh, I can't do it. But then the night of her funeral, I started reading them. And it was like such a gift to have them because, you know, you always regret not knowing more about your family. And then I sort of realized like, oh, I think that I had felt like if I read her story, it would be my problem sort of to take on. Like I would have to carry it. But when I read it, it was like, oh, I've been carrying this time. I just didn't know what it was that I was carrying. And when I was able to sort of understand what it was that I was carrying, I was really able to like understand myself in a much deeper way. I don't know that I was able to like transform or become a completely different person overnight through reading her book, but I did find it really helpful.
Well, I just love this notion of writing as mediumship as well. I mean, I always wonder, and I love all your attention in the book to souls because I think about souls so much, you know, not that I don't have the same habits of, you know, crossing myself so they don't escape or, you know, but there's a lot of discussion of souls. And I always think about that, especially with characters and all these books. You know, like sometimes the sense is stupid, but you know, I'm like, who are all these characters? And I live in a room of books, you know, like, do they come out? Do they know each other? Like, I want to introduce some of them to each other. That's always been like one of my dreams is like, oh my gosh, well, that character would really get along with that character. But like, where do these characters come from that we, how do we just invent people? And do they exist in some plane and they're just coming in? Like, why do characters just like do things when we write? You know, that's why everyone's like, get in the chair, because like literally you need to, you know, it's like putting your fingers on a Ouija board, really, the keyboard.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is just a very strange feeling that's hard to kind of describe, where when you get into the zone and you're just hearing your characters talking and you're just transcribing it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like something that happens automatically. You do need to get in the chair and show up and show up and show up. And then it starts happening. And then it stops happening. And then it starts happening. Like it's not like a continuous just.
I'm like, where are they? Yeah. Voices? Come back.
Come back. Exactly. Yeah. With this book, it was so helpful. Like I did a ton of research for the historical stuff that was set during the revolution. And because I was just reading so many like memoirs and oral histories and novels that were just set during that time, that were written during that time, I was just really fully immersed in the research. And because of that, I was really able to just tap into that sort of channeling type of energy very easily. And so like all of those sections just would come out of me. Mm-hmm. It was really fun to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. I think like research can be hard in a novel because a lot of times, you know, I don't write normally like a ton of historical fiction. And so it's intimidating to write about something that you've never witnessed, that you've never been, a place you've never been to. You know, I've been to some of these places, but I haven't been there during the revolution, you know? Okay. So just writing about that stuff is feels like intimidating and like, oh, I don't have the authority. I'm not an expert on this. I'm just going to keep doing research forever and ever and ever. And that is what I did for like several years before I even started writing the book. But once, you know, once I started writing, it was really nice to have that research as sort of like a soupy sort of place to be in while I kind of was able to figure out who my characters were and tell the story.
And how did you get your start as a writer?
So I feel like people are always like, oh, I wanted to be a kid. Like since I was a kid, I wanted to be a writer. I think I hated writing as a kid. I had wanted to be a photographer. And even in college, like I started off, I went to Columbia and I was doing like visual. I thought I was going to be doing photography. And then I just took a writing class in college as an undergrad because my friend, shout out to Matt Grice, who lived next door to me freshman year, was like encouraged me to do it. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of like photography in the sense that I can like create these scenes, but I don't need any equipment. I don't need other people. I can just do it. I don't need to be like in a dark room full of like stinky chemicals. I can just sit at my computer and, you know, create the stuff in my head. And that just seemed easier. But then it wasn't really easier, like once I kind of got into it. But that's where I started. And then I did an MFA like several years out of college at WashU in St. Louis. And that was just like such an amazing experience. It was such a nurturing program. And it was like really small program. It was a 2-year program with 5 fiction writers each year. So there was like 10 of us in the workshop. And we were just so, I still to this day am in a workshop with people from that program. And we share, you know, we share our work. And it was just so nice. It was a funded program. So everybody was, you know, not having to worry about like working at the same time as being in school. And that was really nice. And yeah, everyone was just, they did a really good job picking people who were just like really, you know, aside from being really talented writers, were also just like really kind people who were really good editors for each other. And yeah, it was just a really nice experience. But then I didn't start writing my novel until actually after I had graduated from that program. And that was such a different type of writing than writing short stories where like it's this ongoing thing. And sometimes showing that to other people before it's ready is like a little bit tricky. Like you have to just find like people who basically will read it and be like, keep going, but not really give you too much feedback because it can mm-hmm. be like a little deflating, you know, mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. it's too early in the process. So luckily from the program, there were like a few people who we've served that function for each other and we read each other's very, very early drafts, you know, that aren't really ready for prime time.
Yeah, that's really good advice to anybody who is an early reader for anyone else. You know, go easy. Just like, I just made the mistake of reading. I wrote like 1,000 words of my next novel and I read it to my son who is like the greatest reader, even though he's 9. Anyway, so I started reading it and he was like, Mom, you need a strong lead. And I was like, I was like, you know what? You're right. And then I kept reading the first page and he's like, why are you telling us all of this now? And I was like, you're right. I should save all this for later. But then I was like so discouraged. I couldn't get back into it. So I was like, oh, it's all a waste. That was all a waste of time. That whole like afternoon that I spent, you know, but of course it's never really a waste because you can't get where you're going unless you write the first part, but still.
Of course. Yeah. And I'm sure all of that information, even if it's not, it doesn't end up being at the beginning, will be in there, you know.
Yeah. Somewhere.
In some way. Yeah.
I always have like a save for later doc so I don't feel bad right? Do you do that? Like keep what you cut over here?
I don't even know what I do. Yeah. I was for a while using this program where you could, I think it's called Scrivener, where you can like put, you can kind of keep like a lot of different information in an organized fashion. So you can like be like, oh, this is where I'm going to have my descriptions of X or whatever. And you can, and it's like labeled. And it was very convenient, but I haven't used that in a while.
That would probably be better. I always open like four different docs, like my the characters, because I can never remember who I'm like, what was her name? I don't know. Anyway, are you working on a new book now?
I'm in like very, very early stages, like definitely too early to really even be able to like talk coherently about it. But yeah, I usually start with like some research. And so I have that research and I don't even know exactly what it's going to be, but I have just a sense, like usually I can just kind of feel it like physically, like, am I going in the right direction? Like, does this seem exciting? And so when I was working on it, which was like several months ago, I was like starting to get somewhere, but it is hard. It's like, you have to, it's like a snowball or something. Like you need to get to like a certain point before it feels like it won't just like disappear from your head completely if you step away from it. So
yes,
it definitely can. I'm definitely not at that point yet, but I'll be sure when I am not to read it to your children.
Yeah. Don't read it to my son. No, he'll get better. You know, I have to train him. I'll play him this part of the thing and explain why.
My daughter is 10 and she's also, very honest, which I appreciate.
Yeah. It's good to get the brutal feedback.
I'm from like a critical Russian family. So I grew up on a lot of brutal feedback.
Yeah, I'm from a Jewish family. Nobody holds back at all. Yeah, especially my grandmother, who this book really connected me to. both my grandmothers, honestly. Okay, what advice do you have to aspiring authors?
Well, I guess to keep going, I feel is like the best advice, really. I think there's a lot of rejection that happens when you're writing and you can't really, or when you're trying to publish stuff and you just can't take it too personally. And if you know that like all the writers that you love were rejected many, 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 many times, and that it's not a reflection of quality necessarily at all, I think that can be really encouraging. Because I do feel like I have a lot of friends from college, from grad school, who are really, really talented writers, but they stopped writing, you know? And I think that like, a lot of it just is about persistence, and you definitely just improve through just doing it over and over and over and over again. So I think that's probably the best advice. And I guess use Scrivener if you need to organize your research.
I've heard authors talk about it before, Scrivener, but I didn't realize that it had that capability. All right, maybe I'll figure out how to use it. And this cover, which is so cool, and the title, just 2 seconds on that. Was this always the title? Did you have input on the cover? Did you always see it as sort of a Russian doll, you know, the thing?
You know, the title originally was like something, I don't even remember, but it was much worse. My agent came up with the title. And when he said it, I was like, yes, that's it. It's perfect. Because the story is like a nesting doll of the generations of women. And like, it's all about mothers, you know? So I like that it wasn't like Russian doll or nesting doll. I like that it was mother doll. It was kind of like a little different take on that. Cause you know, also you think of like baby dolls. So this is just like, there's something about that. So when he said, cause we were kind of going through like potential titles, and that one was just great. And the cover is just, the only input I had on the cover was, I was like, oh, what if we added like a word collage element to the tears?
Yep.
And I think that looks really good. Yeah. It's so funny, right? When your book gets like a face and suddenly you're just like, that's my book. I'm really happy with, and I guess literally my book has a face on it. So.
Yep. Well, it's so original and the voice is so great. And it's so creative. It's just really awesome. Very cool. Very cool book.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. And thank you again for joining so early in the morning. I am so sorry. So sorry.
Thank you. This is great.
Okay.
I love talking about it.
Thanks. All right. Good luck on your trip.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.